What is this?
This horrendous sound quality.
It sounds like garbage.
Which is the only sound quality I can get because Spotify isn't working for me right now.
We don't have good sound quality as is.
No. This is Rocks in the Box by the Decemberists, who, as you may know, is a band from the 21st century.
I've heard.
So why are we playing them in 1917? Well, the song Rocks in the Box from the album The King is Dead is about the speculator mine explosion.
We've talked about that, right?
No. We've talked about so many explosions.
They all blend together.
Yes, we have not talked about the June explosion.
I feel like 1917 explosions, like that's like what mass shootings are now.
Yes. Except mass shootings now, as bad as they are, they're like 1/100th as deadly as the mass explosions from 100 years ago.
But just as frequent.
Yes. So this one was only an ancillary war explosion. This was not a munitions factory that exploded, this was a mine that exploded.
And why was this worthy of a December song? With all the explosions in 1917, why this one?
Well, it was an interesting story. The Granite Mountains / Speculator Mine disaster happened on June 8th. They were lowering down a rope, and a carbide lamp went by, and it set off the oil-soaked cloth that the rope was made of, and it started to burn all the way up. And it hit all the timbers that were holding the mine up. Mm-hmm. And the timbers caught on fire. And
really like Rube Goldberg almost, isn't it?
Yes, but that's how mine collapses work. Mm-hmm. As we learn from King Cole.
Yeah, my father was shocked that kids say don't know who Rube Goldberg was. He was shocked.
I heard a rumor from like second grade on that Rube Goldberg was the first living person to have his name in the dictionary.
Really?
And I'm not sure if that's true.
Rube? I mean, maybe like Rube. Oh, like, wait, hold on. Did the word Rube come from Rube Goldberg?
No, I don't think so.
I didn't think so either.
No.
I pictured that as like you had like a Rube on.
Yeah, and I talked to someone who looks this stuff up, and he verified that Dickens is, like, the word Dickensian got in the dictionary while Charles Dickens was still alive. Mm-hmm. So that's not the answer.
So the teacher that told you this and like said, hey, full of shit.
Could be wrong. Could be totally wrong. But
back then, you couldn't verify.
But I still have not verified.
I turned this off. I can't.
The first
can't hear myself think. These rock and roll kids.
Okay. I don't know how to turn it off. There we go. Bye bye. Sorry guys.
You have an elderly quality using a computer.
I do. I used to be with it, then it changed, and I'm not with it anymore.
No, you're dead. Yeah, there's something like you're out. Like I can see you trying to focus your eyes and figure out where to put your hands, and you have that little bit of panic, like, you know, where the only word you know is the word download.
See, there's a pair of fears. The one fear is, of course, not knowing anything and needing my kids in order to explain the most basic of technologies to me, which I'm sure is going to happen no matter how much I try to stay with it. But there's another fear, which I fear even more as I get older, which is that I'm going to be like a Fred Willard character who's going to be walking around and he knows the new slang. Hey, fidget kitters! Fidget kitters, Fit! And it's like, oh God, it's called fidget spinners and it's not actually a phrase you just yell. Please, just go away.
I think you're better off being that kind of dad than the one who actually gets it, though.
I'm thinking of it as a human being, though, not just as a dad.
Yeah.
I have very clear memories of this guy at work, and he had, like, $400 glasses on, and there were, like, you know, five different shades of plastic, and he was not the guy who should be wearing those glasses. No, he was the guy who was trying way, way too hard. He had this big smile on his face, like, I'm pulling it off. It's like, no, you're not. All I see is you should not be wearing those glasses.
Yeah, I accidentally was given a very trendy haircut last year. And
the Marc Maron haircut, right?
It was only Marc Maron because my hair is gray on the sides. It's the only thing made of Marc Maron. I could tell the barber thought I would have, like Bieberish hair.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but it didn't work, really, you know, but
yeah,
it was like a trendy barber I went to, and I put my trust in him too much. I have a very youthful face, and you look at me and you think he must be like, I don't know, 19, 20 years old. But, you know, I'm not. Right. And
I'm looking at the gray in your beard right now.
You know, but this barber must have assumed, like, yeah. Here's a 19-year-old with an older man's haircut. Let me hip him up a little bit.
I think I could pull off a youthful, trendy haircut. However, I don't know anything about hair maintenance. I have, like, the same brush I've had since high school, and I know one way of combing my hair, and that's it. And no matter what haircut you give me, I'm going to comb my hair in the same way I've always been combing it.
I feel like if you sell a couple more books, mm-hmm. you get to have, like, an eccentric haircut.
You think I could pull it off?
Yeah, I think you can. I think you can be, like, you know, local eccentric kind of, like, you know, goofy outfits and, I don't know.
For one day, I had sideburns, and I thought, maybe I can be the sideburns guy.
Yeah, I feel like with every book sale, you're allowed one more
eccentricity.
You know, yes.
Yes.
Exactly.
I remember Dean Koontz one day just, like, shaved off his goatee, and his trademark was, like, his goatee and like, a receding hairline.
Well, he had almost, like a Dabney Coleman look.
Yes, he had a real Dabney Coleman look. And then all of a sudden, he had this like, John Edwards look. Like full, giant, ridiculous head of hair.
Yeah.
Like, you're not even trying to be subtle about it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the very first question everyone will say is, so that's new. Like, there was no gradual...
Well, yeah, because we all know what he looked like.
Right. Right. And he said, I was tired of being a bald guy. Mm-hmm. So he just decided to do something about it.
Yeah, but I'm talking, like, you can get really wacky. Like, you know what I mean? Like, when you're an author.
Yeah.
Like, people like, who's that lunatic? No, that's not a lunatic. That's just a writer.
Yeah, so I can have, like one of those, like, I look like a dinosaur almost because I have, like, three mohawks, but they're all spiked and held up with
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a guy who goes to my gym that has that thing. But I don't know if he's been published or not.
That guy is, shoot. If I had a good pull, I would have it here.
John Irving. There you go. All right, okay. Let's move on.
So, welcome to 100 Years Ago Today, the 1917 podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Ryan, and joining me as always is Vinny Nardiello.
Ahoy, hoy, Jeff.
Ahoy, hoy. I remembered. Yeah. I have it all written down here. And I remember to talk about our sponsor this week. Our sponsor is Sowing the Seeds of Victory. A reminder from the U.S. government, plant and raise your own vegetables. Write to the National War Garden Commission in Washington, D.C. for free books on gardening, canning, and drying. Every garden, a munitions plant.
Yeah, do you garden, Matt, there?
My in-laws brought some plants over a couple of years ago, and they've been doing very well. But it was just a way for me to not have to cut a little strip of grass.
No, I'm like, look at your yard. Do you have, like, vegetables? Do you have, like, tomatoes or anything like that?
No, we don't have anything of weed. There is some mint growing back there, so conceivably we could make mojitos.
Why aren't we?
I don't know what else goes in a mojito. Than ice.
You got your rum?
Okay, I don't have that.
All right, we can make a... You do sugar?
I do have sugar.
All right, well, we don't have rum, so we're using make sugar... a simple syrup with mint in it. Let's see, do you have any alcohol or what can we throw in there?
I might have vodka. Can you do something with vodka and mint?
I don't know. I don't know. I guess we could just, blend them.
Yeah.
I'm going to blend them. Vodka.
Mint and vodka has to, that's such a, like a easy first drink idea. Someone mm-hmm. must have done that.
Yeah. I'm surprised you even have vodka here. I know you're a teetotaler.
I'm not. A total teetotaler. I'm a some teetotaler. No, tea sumler. But that sounds like sommelier, which is someone who drinks wine.
That's what I thought you were talking about.
Yeah. You saw me trying to go there.
A sommelier of tea. What tea would you like to try, sir?
I have friends who are like that. They have like 40, 50 different flavors of tea.
Mm-hmm. Are they writers?
No.
But right, they're not weird enough for that then. Okay.
So, there is a lot of stuff that happened this week. We gotta jump right into it. This week, 100 years ago today, was the Battle of Messines. This was bad. The British army killed 10,000 Germans in like a day. And they used it with something called ammonial mines. And it's...
But they're on our side, so we'll say it's okay.
Right, but if you ever wanted to know what was the... worse mass killing that didn't involve biological, chemical, or nuclear weapons it was this week, 100 years ago today, the Battle of Messines. Mm-hmm. Ammonial mines killed 10,000 German soldiers.
How does an ammonial mine work?
You had to ask.
You're the one who claims to do research.
My research was writing down the word ammonial and then the word mine.
Well, next right, well, we can figure it out. Hold on. So there's ammonia.
Uh-huh. And ammonia is used in bombs.
Yes.
Yeah. So it was some sort of, you know, like the equivalent of a fertilizer bomb.
Mm-hmm. There. Where did they bomb? What did they?
It was in the middle of the war. They found a bunch of Germans and planted bombs and then blew it up. That's my
where they blow up exactly.
You are asking me a whole lot of very pointed, specific questions. Fully aware, I don't have the answers.
But wait, I want to know where they did this. What happened? What are the circumstances?
Would you like to know what time of day it was?
I'd like to know more than the one sentence of research you've...
Well, this was... There's big things and there's little things every week. And even though this is a big thing, we're talking about it from 100-year remove. And it unfortunately fits into yet another... A whole bunch of people died and we don't have much to say about it other than, wow, that's sad.
Mm-hmm.
But there's other things we can talk about. Like, as we promised last week, the British royal family changing their name because they didn't want their name associated with Germany.
And well, their original name was Lipschitz.
Well, their original name was actually Saxe-Coburg, and there was also some Gotha family members. So I think the official hyphenation would be Saxe-Coburg-Gotha.
And what are they now? They're the...
They're the Windsors.
The Windsors, yeah.
Yes. They had always lived in Windsor Castle, and they picked the name Windsor as their new family name to chop off all of the German heritage.
I wonder if there was any argument about that.
About whether they should do it or what the new name
should be. What the new name should be, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, Windsor was a good safe pick because it had already been associated with the British royal family.
Who are the Buckinghams?
Oh, Buckingham would be really good. Then there's an alternate universe where Lindsay Buckingham becomes accidental royalty and, like, King Ralph's himself into
the... I was about to say King Ralph, basically.
King Ralph's himself into the... Oh, what about King Ralph 2, where he also becomes president? He needs to do two jobs at once. It's such a beloved movie. We can do it again. Mm-hmm. We can do it again.
It's such a really very beloved movie, King Ralph?
Yes.
I'm pretty sure I saw that in theaters.
I'm pretty sure I saw John Goodman on Saturday Night Live call it, quote, a turd, unquote. One more reason why the Brits may have changed their name. Remember we were talking about the attacks on London, the first air bombs, air raid going on? That was used by Gotha G4 planes.
So they didn't want that meme.
Right. Right. It would be like if Trump had his name on something terrible and gaudy and was just an embarrassment to all of America.
Yeah.
I don't know what that would be like. But obviously, he would.
Well, no, I guess in some ways it's similar to like Obama's middle name being Hussein, right?
Yes. Oh, actually, that's a much...
That's an actual
analogy.
Comparison that makes sense.
Yes, instead of me just going for the laugh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Something else...
Don't get me wrong. No, I was with you.
Yeah, yeah.
We don't get that political over here.
No, we... Mostly we talk about Wilson.
I don't know how many Trump supporters have even listened to this. Or non-Trump, or enemies of Trump, anybody. I don't know who's listening, really.
I miss the non-politicized times. Not to say that the politicalization is all wrong, because there are a lot of things that really do need addressing, and this is not just normal stuff that's going on. But I miss the day where you wouldn't necessarily know if someone was a Republican or a Democrat.
Yeah.
Because you couldn't tell unless you asked them.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm not a Republican, but I'm also a 40-year-old white guy in the suburbs. I'm assuming there's people who would think I am.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
You know? I would think that I give off a Republican vibe. You, however, you have more, your glasses are more liberal than mine. Like, you have glasses and a look like, you actually look a little bit like Rachel Maddow.
I do. I regularly think I'm on TV and then I get disappointed. You are wearing a Simpsons t-shirt. That's a much more liberal t-shirt than mine.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not even wearing a t-shirt. I'm wearing a button-down shirt.
Yeah, well, I think people would think of you as they would instantly know your politics.
But if we switched heads, we then created the ultimate liberal and the ultimate conservative.
Oh, see, I'm thinking that, like, you know, a PSA about, like, you know, not being political without getting, you know, politicizing everything, mm-hmm. and you and I would deliver it, and in the PSA we'd switch heads.
Oh, okay. Now, would it be a really terrible still store image? Because I'm hoping it would be.
I'm picturing it being gory. Just gory as all hell. Just blood and tongues like hanging out. Like we actually like simulate like a decapitation.
There's a warning before the public service announcement.
You know, like, once our heads are reattached onto each other's bodies, we're just slurring our words, and at the end, your eyeball just pops out and rolls across the ground.
We move on from talking about death to talking about a wonderful, remarkable lack of death. Our big story this week is Ernest Shackleton, the Antarctic explorer. His Antarctic mission did not succeed. He didn't do what he was supposed to do, but he brought every single one of his men back alive. It is a remarkable achievement.
Well, it's easy when you don't do it, right? Bring back alive, like...
How much do you know about Ernest Shackleton?
Nothing.
Nothing?
Nothing at all.
Okay.
It reminds me of Rusty Shackleford.
Rusty Shackleford, the fake name from the guy in King of the Hill,
the
right?
The Big D himself.
Yeah.
Rusty Shackleford.
You don't know anything about Shackleton. This is all going to be new to you.
You're mocking me a little, I could tell.
No. I just assumed that, like everyone got into Everest 20 years ago, Shackleton was one of those things that people got into.
People were into Everest 20 years ago?
Yeah, there was an Everest. A lot of people climbed Everest and then they died.
Is this like when that IMAX swing dancing thing came back?
It was exactly at the same time as swing dancing. And there
were I embraced a lot swing of dancing about instead. It.
I went,
you know, you're one or the other.
Okay.
I went with swing dancing.
So I can ask
I don't know anything about this stuff. I can Lindy hop. I have a Lindy hop right now.
So Ernest Shackleton had two previous Antarctic expeditions. There were 17 expeditions in one generation as what they called the heroic age of Antarctic expeditions. These were all the people that used to be exploring what they called Darkest Africa, Darkest Peru, all through finding a source of every river in the world, and eventually everything got charted, except Antarctica. In 1917, people still didn't know much about Antarctica. It was an actual continent. It wasn't just a big frozen, you know, pile of ice. Antarctica is still a frozen pile of ice, but there's land underneath it.
Yeah.
So, one by one, all of these rich Brits decided we're going to mount expeditions and we're going to explore. The first person actually makes...
Is there a war going on right now with England? Like, what are they doing?
Yes, but there's still twits. There's always going to be twits who have decided I'm going to risk 19 people's lives in order to stand on something very cold.
I wish we had twits over here. Yeah. We do, but like, we don't have the word.
No, we don't have the word.
Yeah, but...
And because of that, we don't have that in our culture.
Yeah. Oh, well.
So, the very first person to make it to the South Pole is Roald Amundsen, who is not English. He was Norwegian, I believe. So, after him, everyone else knew both, well, someone else has done it, we can do it too, and we need to top Roald Amundsen. We need to do something he hasn't done. So, what Shackleton was doing on his expedition was he wanted to land in one half of the continent, traverse 1,800 miles, and then get on another boat on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
He was going to do this by sled dog. So he took a bunch of guys, 69 sled dogs, and went down in one boat. He had another boat that was going with him that waited on the whole other side of the continent.
Aren't sled dogs usually side by side?
Yeah, now 69 sled dogs doesn't mean like one guy with 69 sled dogs in front of him.
Oh, right.
There was a lot of expeditions, so they had lots of sleds and they had lots of supplies.
Oh, okay. I was picturing like a really long dog train, but like one dog doesn't get a partner. Like he's up front, he's like the Rudolph dog.
Oh,
yeah.
Now I'm sad. If you have any feelings about dogs, this is a good time to stop listening to the podcast.
Well, I do, actually. I love my dog. I don't know if I want to hear about this.
Okay.
Is dogs, like, is that considered cruel now? Like, does PETA have issues with, like, sled dogs and the Iditarod?
I bet they do, and I bet there's a rational reason that these are huskies and they love this. They've been bred for it for generations. It's like you can't tell the sled dog not to pull the same way you can't tell a draft horse not to pull.
Mm-hmm.
It's just part of who they are. It's part of their heritage. So
it sounds like you're excusing the cruelty of sled dogs.
I don't know enough to know that it's actually cruel.
You saw that movie with Cuba Gooding Jr.
I did, Snow Dogs.
Yes.
And I saw the Spirited sequel, 8 Below. Spirited, I mean like a sequel in spirit, because it didn't actually have Cuba Gooding Jr.
Mm-hmm.
What's funny is that Snow Dogs had talking dogs, but it shouldn't have.
Oh, the dogs talked in that movie?
Yes. And 8 Below did not have talking dogs, but it should have. Because the whole movie is, like, the majority of it is dogs alone with no people surviving. And they all have names and personalities.
Do the dogs talk to Cuba Gooding?
In his imagination, they do.
Oh.
Yeah.
Are there celebrities that play the dogs?
No. But at one point...
What?
At one point, he does have a hallucination where Michael Bolton tells him how to be a black man.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's weird.
I was hoping, like, oh, here's the lead dog played by Gary Shandling. Like, hey, yeah, like that'd be like, you know, that's what I was hoping. Like, each dog was a...
Yeah, the Gilbert Godfrey dog.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But instead, yeah. No, they're just... non-celebrity
speaking. They could have been. I'm sure they didn't pull a Gary Shandling.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, they maybe could have pulled a... I'm going to wait for the pull now.
You have to practice this.
Yeah, I'm terrible.
Hey, they pull a...
maybe they could have pulled a Gary Delabate.
Greg Kinnear? Is Greg Kinnear... apply here. You're right. That Gary Delabate would be a good pull.
Yeah. In terms of... If I cut the rest of that out, people would just think, oh, well, Jeff made a joke and Vinny doesn't appreciate it. So, Shackleton loads up his two boats. He has scientific staff, he has sailors, he has a couple of photographers. He has trouble staffing them, so he staffs them at the last minute, which is kind of not the ideal way to go. No, I'm still not sure who exactly paid for all of this. He had lots of different sponsors, and part of the expedition was spending 6 months to a year schmoozing all these rich people to give them money so you can go off and do your TWIT adventure.
I've done that with trying to get a TV pilot made.
Yes. So you're familiar with the idea.
Yes.
Yeah, and I've read a lot of adventure novels, and they all have the same plot point. Where it's like, oh, we need to go do something amazing so far away, and it takes lots of fancy equipment, and there's no way we can afford it. And then some, like, rich guy comes and says, well, I heard there's $2 billion in silver there. Let me give you $150 million in funding, and you can go have your adventure. And it's like, well, you wouldn't do that in real life. Mm-hmm. No one just drops $150 million at the drop of a hat. And there's not $2 billion in anything just waiting around
somewhere. No, it gets patched together from, like, a...
Yeah.
You know... But is are dudes trying to make like an indie film? Is that our version of like Twits now? You know, like
I think YouTube stars are our versions of Twits. People have given up trying to get financing and just do it themselves,
mm-hmm.
which is laudable. But then when they start convincing themselves that they're like more popular than TV and movie stars. But I don't know enough about YouTube stars to know if that actually happens or if that's just a stereotype.
I feel like people always have to, like, tell you, like here's a conversation, like this guy's a YouTube star. I'm like, I've never heard of him. Like, he has 50 million people that watch him, like, right? And I'm like how is that possible? That can't be a real number, right? Like,
yeah.
Is there just, like, one dude hitting refresh a lot?
I was on something that got a lot of hits, and every couple of months, I would, like, see it again via a link, and I'd click on it. And one time I noticed that the YouTube
click... Well, you're in it?
I was in it, yeah. The YouTube click numbers went way down. They went from like 1 million plus down to 300,000. And I think YouTube has two different ways of collecting the information. One of them is they just see all the clicks and just post it. And it, like 6 months later, when someone actually starts paying attention to the numbers, if it hits like a million or something, they'll start auditing the clicks to see, oh, this is the same person on the same computer who's looked at it 19 times. We're going to bump that down to one. And this person didn't actually count because they left after 2 seconds.
You really blew over. What were you in?
It was a Star Talk episode with Neil deGrasse Tyson.
And the two of you were in it together?
Like, yeah. Yeah, I was his guest for the history of video games.
I don't remember this.
Oh. Yeah, I guess I didn't make a big enough deal about it.
You probably should have.
Yeah. But it was like...
This is you like doing like something like respectful. I remember you were on that MTV show.
Right. That was in 1997.
And you told everybody about it.
I didn't... I told you, but I didn't tell everybody.
I remember people made a big deal about it. You often walk around with these... Because back then, you couldn't just show someone on your phone. You'd have like a big picture that you printed up of yourself right. With Matt Pinfield.
Yes. I actually had an AV TV VCR set that I was playing on the loop, and I had a little Honda generator underneath it. Pushed it around and weighed about 85 pounds and was very unstable, especially the sidewalks because some of them were bumpy. I kept on needing to run around to the front to catch it from falling down because of a CRT monitor. But it was important that people saw that I was on TV.
Hey, but Matt Pinfield, buddy of mine.
He briefly knew my first name.
Good word, name tag.
Okay, back to Shackleton. The first part of the trip, which is basically sailing down to Antarctica, goes okay. They need to actually land in Antarctica, which is the hard part, because there's pack ice all around them. They get stuck in the pack ice, and they can't get close enough to shore to disembark. At one point, they were close enough to see a 100-foot wall of ice, and they decided, I don't want to climb up a 100-foot wall of ice. We'll just wait. Eventually, the ice flow will take us somewhere better. And it never does. The ice flow just takes them out like miles and miles out to sea, but there's still ice all over the place.
And the dogs are okay, right?
The dogs are all okay. Still 69 dogs on board.
All right.
Okay, that was in January.
There's even one dog.
That was in January 1915. They are stuck in that ice until October. That's awful. Imagine like you know, flying to another country, wanting to go on a big expedition, having all your bags packed, and like you were stuck in the airport and you can't get out of the airport.
And the airport's cold.
And that lasts like for so long that a human child could be born.
Mm-hmm.
And you haven't even started. And you realize not only am I not going to get what I'm trying to do, people may die in trying to give up and go back.
What were they doing during this time? They were
making photographs. They built dog loos instead of igloos. Mm-hmm. They converted their ship.
That's an igloo made out of dog, which I think that's not right.
That's a quality joke.
Mm-hmm. Now they all are, man.
They all are. The reason why they were stuck in the ice was because they had confidence that they could get out. There was an earlier German ship that had gotten through a few years earlier, but they were stuck. Eventually, they had to leave. They left in October because their ship finally got crushed by the ice floes, which is pushing it on all directions. They abandoned ship in minus 25 degree cold. And they decided, we're going to walk. We can't walk across Antarctica anymore, but we can walk to safety. We can walk to the next human habitation, which is about 300 miles away. And in the first 3 days of walking, they walk 2 kilometers. That's how awful it is. In terms of the ice just being all cracked and jagged.
2 kilometers, I believe that's 250 miles.
I think your English to American translation is correct.
Okay.
So the help they're trying to get is really transitory. It's like this is a spot where boats sometimes go. And they need to go 300 miles just to get there to see if there will ever be a boat there. Because there's no chance anyone will ever see them anywhere else. So this is how bad their fate is. The weather started to warm finally from 25 below, but that actually made it worse because it warmed enough so that the upper layers melted so that they were now walking through slush. And as bad as ice is, slush is worse because now you are totally frozen. And the boat you're okay. pulling through. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And the boat that you were pulling is now like dragging through the slop, and you have an extra couple hundred pounds of sleet and slurt hanging on to it.
Slurt?
Slurt. Is that a real word?
Like slushy dirt.
Slushy dirt, yeah.
Look at you. Hold on. Let me read this. Dear Sniglet.
Rich Hall's going to be sending me a little packet of checks every month because of this one.
And you get Son of Sniglet as a prize if we use Dear Sniglet.
There was a rebellion at this point. One man for one day had a rebellion because he said that Shackleton was no longer the captain. There was some sort of English rules of maritime law that he was not obeying because it had been too many days, or I don't know the specifics, but Shackleton basically told him, shut up, you need to listen to me, we are all going to die, probably, definitely, but there's a slight chance we can survive, but you've got to all work together. So that ended the mutiny, but there were other people who naturally thought, I don't want to follow this man
anymore. How are the dogs at this point? How are the dogs?
They caught a lot of seals to eat, and the dogs were fed the seals, too. So they were doing okay with
seals. Were the seals cute? Were they cute seals?
They were ugly seals.
Good.
And they listened to nu metal 20 years ago, so so you definitely were okay with them dying. And one of them had a tattoo, but it was like one of those really gross tattoos. It was just barbed wire and puka shells. Oh, you did not mind at all.
A bunch of douche seals.
Yeah. And then they were tired of feeding seals to dogs. So they ate all of the dogs.
Yeah. I feel that's where this was going.
You're feeling that's where that was going. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All but two. I think two dogs survived. But I don't know if that was...
Was it like, oh, we're saved before them? Or were these the dog... Like, were these dogs, like, maybe they were, like prison snitches and kind of, like, ratted out the other dogs?
I think, unfortunately, it was like, if you're poor but you have some money, you buy the box of cake mix so that you know when your daughter's birthday comes around, you'll still have the cake mix if you didn't have any money.
That's what the dogs are for.
I think that's what the dogs were for. So they decide they're going to take rowboats to a place called Elephant Island once they can finally see enough water in order to put the boats in water.
So next up, we're going to eat some elephants. That's the next plan. We're just going around eating. Like,
there were no
eating adorable animals
or anything else on Elephant Island. But that was a way of jumping from island to island to ultimately get to their goal, which was Deception Island. Deception Island had an old church that whalers used to worship in. And they figured at Deception Island, we can tear down the church and build a proper boat and get out of here. Because the rowboats can't survive in the ice floes because they crushed the ship 10 times bigger.
Deception Island sounds like such a reality show.
Yeah.
After Temptation Island.
Right.
Yeah, like...
Right, Deception Island. One of these people is not who they say they are.
Yes, exactly. On Deception Island.
So there was another plan that they were going to take one of the ships and they were going to fit it out so that it could try to survive the ice floes. And they renamed this ship the James Caird. So that was an 800-mile journey that they were going on. So the crew had a terrible decision, and I'm not sure what I would do in this case. So either you stay behind on Elephant Island where there is nothing, and your job is to just wait and try not to die and hope that someone will eventually rescue you. Or you go on a ship, which also has no provisions anymore, and you try to go island hopping in the coldest water in the world and hope that eventually you'll find someone and then have to flag down another ship and go save your friends.
I would think that you go on the boat. You keep moving.
Yeah.
Nothing going on here on Elephant Island.
Yeah. I think I would do that also. But that's also like the survival thing to do because you have a better chance of surviving. You have a better chance of hunting and fishing. So they finally arrive on something called South Georgia Island, the James Caird guys. They have to then cross over an entire mountain just to get to the other side, which is where Stromness is, which is the whaling town that they're hoping to find at least one human being at. So they walk over the entire mountain and they hear like a bell. And it's the first human sound they've heard in, like, 2 years. So they run down, they find the Sromnus people, they take pictures of themselves, they get help, they get food. But it still takes a full-on year for Shackleton to go back and get his guys on Elephant Island. Because he needs to tell everyone in London, all of his backers, so this went belly up. And I need a whole bunch more money to rescue half the people who I left behind. And I also need a ship. And the ship's probably going to be destroyed, because any ship gets destroyed if it goes to Antarctica.
Now, hold on, this 100 years ago, was that when he left for this expedition or returned?
He left in 1914.
Oh, okay.
And at the very end of this, over the course of like a year, the crew starts drifting back to England, where they were originally from. Shackleton is one of the last to come back. And he stops for a couple months in America for a speaking tour. But at the very end of May 1917 is when he finally does come back. It was the same week that we did the huge 10-story episode. So there wasn't even time to fit in the Shackleford story.
Mm-hmm. I know, we got a lot of letters from people.
Did they like it or did they not like it?
Wondering how we just completely...
Oh, left out the, yeah. Ernie Shacks.
You think I was being sincere that we got letters?
I didn't know. I thought maybe you got one.
The only real feedback we got was about you confusing the Heathcliff
and Garfield.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, Heathcliff with the guy from Police Academy.
Oh, right now I'm confusing Heathcliff with Garfield.
Yes.
Right now.
Would that'd be a much more understandable mistake.
Right. Right. So, Shackleton does not give up on Antarctica. He gets ready to go back again in 1921, and in January 1922, he has a heart attack on his ship as it's sailing down to Antarctica. So that's the end of Ernest Shackleford. He did receive what's called the Polar Medal for his work in keeping all of his crew alive. And everyone who did not rebel against Shackleton got a medal as well.
Mm-hmm.
So if you mutinied, if you had one day and he just yelled at you and he goes, okay, fine.
No medal for you.
No medal for you. Like 2 years later, everyone else gets medal and you're Chewbacca at the end of Star Wars. Like,
just what? Standing by, yeah.
What? Come on, man.
I always wonder why they, with all the stuff that they like fit, like change retroactively in Star Wars,
mm-hmm.
I've always wondered why that wasn't one of them.
Yeah, why didn't they give Chewie a medal?
Yeah, I mean, it's because people always wonder, like, you know, it's been sort of debated for years why he wasn't given a medal. And
maybe he prefers not to, or maybe it's part of the Wookiee code, or maybe he was just like, you know what, just give me some Gainsburgers. I'm fine. It's all I want out of life.
But I would think that'd be one of the things that, like, George Lucas would have gone back and fixed.
Yeah. Yeah. On to Nickelodeon, because we just talked about Shackleton, I can recommend both of the Shackleton movies that I've seen. One was called Endurance, named after the ship that he was on and the ordeal that he went through. That was an IMAX movie, and it's probably available now, but the IMAX is, you know, a giant, giant square, so it looks weird on regular TVs because the sides are cut off,
mm-hmm.
and you can't see much of the detail. But if you're going to go to an IMAX screening of it.
What's back when, like, IMAX was, like that special? Was there was only a few thing. IMAX theaters, you know?
Right. And they weren't showing, like, popular movies now. They were mm-hmm. only showing, like, weird documentaries about whales and dolphins and fish. The other one was called Shackleton, and it was a two-part miniseries with Kenneth Branagh starring as Ernest Shackleton.
Did these all come out during the 20 years ago Everest craze I've been hearing so much about?
They basically did, yeah. Yeah, and I saw Shackleton when I was subscribing to Netflix on discs, and I was very excited because it was the rare movie where they sent you two discs, but it only counted as one movie.
I don't know. I was at a Big Bad Voodoo Daddy concert that night.
Normally, if you got if you were signing up for a multi-disc thing, it counted as how many discs it was. If it was five discs, then that was five movies that you got. But Shackleton somehow avoided that. I got two discs for the price of one.
Wow.
But then I needed to watch both of them before I could return them, because I couldn't just return one without the other, because they only had one sleeve.
Now, you mentioned, like, I think our first episode, you made that Lawrence of Arabia mistake, where you watched part two first.
Yes. I did not do this, because the DVDs were correctly labeled.
Okay.
But I can't remember if I tried to power through it all in one day, or if I just accepted it's going to be an extra day for this one. I think I waited an extra day. because my wife is watching too, and she's not going to stay up until 2 in the morning just to yeah, but get a little bit of extra.
Do your wife fall asleep during movies?
Yes.
Mine too. I can honestly say we've never watched a movie from beginning to end at home together, ever. And all from dating to
wow.
to marriage, we've never watched a movie beginning to end, 2 hour movie, all in one sitting together.
Now, will you purposely try for a shorter movie, knowing maybe she'll stay awake through this one?
Sometimes we do look at the times on movies, and she's yeah. like, all right, well, I'll fall asleep halfway through that one instead of a quarter of the way through, so let's watch that one instead.
Now, this changes her relationship with movies, right? Because if a movie is, if you're falling asleep during a movie, it's not of paramount value to you. It's something that you can put on while you fall asleep. You're probably used to it. Like, if I put on a Mets game every night before I went to sleep, and you turn the Mets game off one night, it'd be like, put that Mets game back on. That's how I used to get to sleep. Yeah.
No, I shouldn't throw on a movie to go to sleep. But it's, for a reason, just sits on a couch, just drifts off.
Do you get upset sometimes if she's falling asleep during a good part?
I do. Yeah. I do, but I keep that to myself.
Yeah. I remember my wife falling asleep during Casino Royale during a very exciting part. And I was like, how are you missing this? This is the best thing I've ever seen. And she was out because mm-hmm. 5 minutes earlier she decided, or her brain had decided,
I'll give her credit for the fact that, like, she still is convinced by me to try.
Yeah.
For this. Like, you know, at a certain point, you think she'd be like, what? No, don't throw a movie on. We're not going to watch this. Like, I'm just, but, you know, she loves me enough that she's willing to go along with my harebrained scheme.
That's
nice. Watching a 90-minute movie.
On to birthdays. Having a birthday this week is Richard Boone. He was born on June 18th. He's best known for being one of the first TV stars in, well, TV history. He played Paladin in a Western show called Have Gun, Will Travel.
Mm-hmm.
This answers a lot of questions I had. There is a minor comic book character called Paladin who was like a mercenary character, and he made a lot of jokes. But every time Paladin showed up, they decided that the title of a story would be Have Gun, Will Travel. And I never knew why. I knew the word Paladin from my Dungeons & Dragons days, because that's where Paladin came from. But I had no idea what Have Gun, Will Travel meant, because there often wasn't even a comma there. Like, well, that's not even a sentence. Those are just words. Like, I have a gun and I will travel. Okay, though that's a sentence. Have Gun, Will Travel is not. Have you heard that phrase before? Do you know that show?
I've heard of the show. I don't know anything about it.
Okay. I think he was like an equalizer character. Someone would write in and say, someone's stealing my horses, and he'll come in and stop the horse.
And shoot the horses.
Yeah, he was a really terrible, terrible paladin. I told you to save the orphanage, not to burn it down.
If I burn it down, they can't take it.
It's the last thing they'd expect.
I suppose it hasn't been a Paladin reboot at any point.
Yeah. Yeah, you would have to call it Paladin. You couldn't call it Have Gun, Will Travel.
No.
No. And get rid of the Western. It could still be out west, but just making like modern day.
But people are, you know, we're off topic here, but our, we discussed the Cocoon Fantastic Four.
Oh, that's right. I think 2 weeks ago we talked about Cocoon and Fantastic Four.
Yeah, and I've been told a lot of people, they've enjoyed this. They agree that it's just perfect.
Yeah, it lines up so well.
I'm thinking that we should actually maybe, I don't know, make crowdfund and make a movie using the cast of Cocoon.
The cast of Cocoon is almost exclusively dead.
Well, we'd reboot them.
Wait, so we are going to...
We're going to cast someone to play Hume Cronin. We're going to cast an old man
to play Hume Cronin, playing Hume Cronin, playing his character in Cocoon, who would then be playing Mr. Fantastic.
Yes.
And we're going to do that for all of Cocoon.
We're going to get Brimley, though.
Oh, we have to get Brimley.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's still alive. We're going to get Brimley.
I heard Craig Ferguson say he was very excited that they finally booked Wilford Brimley, because he'd been trying for years. And the way he described it was, there's the Wilford Brimley get, which is fantastic, and then there's a Wilford Brimley sit, where you actually have to interview a man who has no interest in talking to you. And that was not as good.
You think Wilford Brimley ever, like just goes and like cries in the graveyard? Like, you know, for all his, like, fallen Cocoon comrades?
What you don't know is that most every image you are imagining of Wilford Brimley, he's like 46.
Yeah, I know.
He just looked old real early.
Mm-hmm. But we're going to get him. He'll be there as a thing.
Yep. And he'll be a fantastic thing.
Whereas everyone else will be liable. Now, the actor who's going to play Kim Cronin playing his Cocoon character becomes...
Mr. Fantastic? Uh-huh.
Should we try to cast him who's actually married to the Jessica... The person who's going to play Jessica Tandy?
I think that's necessary.
Okay.
You need to have an elderly man who's married to an elderly woman who are both long-time beloved actors and actresses.
Do we go young person in old makeup, or do we get an actual old person?
No, actual old people. Mm-hmm. We got to be true to the Cocoon spirit. Now, I would say you could go Ozzie Davis and Ruby Dee, but they are both dead.
Plus, yeah, they're dead.
They're both dead.
But not only that, but, you know, just like when they did the all-female version of Ghostbusters, I imagine mm-hmm. if you change the racial makeup, there's going to be people who grew up in Cocoon that talk about how we are raping their childhood because we've changed the race of...
I have no problem telling those people that what's important is that we are making a movie about people who go into a Cocoon bath and come out with superpowers. And the fact that we have changed the race of the characters is unimportant. Mm-hmm. Be more enlightened about the bit that we are doing. Onto our.
Because I was going to go George Takei as Johnny Storm. George Takei is going to play Don Amici.
Okay, George Takei is
Don Amici.
Yeah.
And Don Amici is going to be Johnny Storm.
We still need a Brimley. We still need a Brimley.
No, Brimley's going to be Brimley.
Oh, Brimley is Brimley. Brimley is Brimley. Okay.
Yeah. He's the only one who's back.
Our quiz this week, because we talked about the British royal family changing their name, this is a classic World War I quiz. These are other World War I name changes, because it wasn't just the royal family that decided to cut ties with their German heritage. So these are all German words, German ideas, German phrases and expressions that we decided to American up.
Mm-hmm. And okay.
Most all of these did not actually work. If you do like a LexisNexis search for them, they barely come up in the newspapers.
Mm-hmm.
But the stories still say that they were successfully changed throughout World
War I. I'm guessing for Kaiser Roll. Kaiser Roll is gone.
Oh, you know, Kaiser Roll actually wasn't on here, but that's a really good one. Because there were guys whose last name was Kaiser, and they purposely changed their name. Okay, number one, sauerkraut. Sauerkraut, what did it change its
Liberty
name?
Cabbage.
Yes, it changed its name to Liberty Cabbage. Very good.
I knew that one.
Yeah, you did.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I remember when we tried to bring French fries to Freedom Fries.
Freedom Fries, uh-huh.
Is, you know, because our ultimate enemy, France.
Yeah, that had a long and storied history.
That Liberty Cabbage was one of the ones that was brought up a lot.
Right. What did Frankfurters change their name to?
I don't know. I was going to keep the Frank part.
You know this.
No, I don't.
You don't?
No.
You don't know another name for Frankfurter?
Well, hot dog.
Hot dog, yeah.
Well, no, I knew that, but
yeah.
I don't like, we're like, oh, we're not going Frank. They're going to be like, you know, Frank.
Oh, I see. They did start calling them Liberty Sausage a little bit, but the name didn't take. Mm-hmm. They just started to use the already existing American name of hot dog.
Yeah, see. Yeah, Frankfurter is now, I don't know, Frank Langella.
What did the hamburger change to?
The beef patty.
No, it changed its name to steamed hams. That's what they call it in upstate New York.
That's what I heard.
No, they actually changed its name to Salisbury steak.
Well, I'm from Utica. That's what Salisbury steak is?
It's more of like a meatloaf sort of thing. And again, that was around before World War I, but people grabbed the name and started to call hamburger Salisbury steak, when officially Salisbury steak is halfway between hamburger and meatloaf.
I've never had a Salisbury steak. It's usually a frozen dinner, right?
Yeah, if you buy it now, it's just a hamburger patty with gravy on it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not exactly a delicacy. What was German chocolate cake renamed as?
All right, here's my guess.
Okay.
They associated them with one of our allies instead. They took away from Germany, gave it to an ally. Like maybe like I'm thinking like it was like British cake or something like that.
You're not far off. They simply stopped calling it German chocolate cake. They just called it chocolate cake.
That there's a style of cake that's a German, like that was just like.
Yeah, but that become like what we think of as chocolate cake is the German chocolate cake okay. style. And same thing with apple pie. There was something called German apple pie, and they just started to call it apple pie. Now, officially, I think...
Was that American as apple pie? Would that be like an American thing?
Yeah, that came from... apple pie originally came from England, but the German apple pie has apple slices, but without any like crust on top.
Mm-hmm.
So it's open-faced. What was bratwurst called? This one I can't truly verify, but it's such a great nickname.
I don't know.
Bratwurst was apparently called the meat pickle. I have a hard time believing that, but I want to believe it. So I included it in the list. What were dachshunds called? We're moving on to dogs for a little
bit. Wiener dogs.
That's what I thought too, but... The site I went to said that they tried to be called Liberty Pups. I don't think that called.
Did they just put Liberty in front of like everything and yeah. that came into a new noun?
Yeah, they just started to switch out the word Germany for Liberty. In World War II, they went from Liberty to Victory, which seemed like a step back. Instead of talking about freedom, we're just talking about how we're going to win. It's not quite the same. But Liberty now is a whole different definition. I feel like it's used so much on the right that it's not really even a... I mean, the ideas of freedom are still around on both sides of the political fence. But if you hear the word liberty, you feel like, oh, this is someone on the far right talking about something that is not actually liberty, but like mm-hmm. their own feeling.
Yes.
Okay, what were German shepherds called?
Shepherds.
They were called Alsatians. And I think there's now a separate breed of Alsatian, which is different than the regular German shepherd. Finally, what were German measles called?
Hmm. I would think they just kept German measles because they're associating them with something bad.
You would think, but no, they changed their name to Liberty Measles.
They did not. That's bullshit. I don't know what to say you got this from. That's total bullshit.
I'm dying of the Liberty Measles. Oh, so much Liberty. It's killing my immune system.
Yeah, there's no way that this list is accurate.
It could be false, but it was fun. And that's it for the end of the 1917 podcast. False but fun seems like a good nickname for us. Join us next week when we celebrate the birthday of Lena Horne.
All right, I can't wait.
Ahoy, hoy.
Ahoy, hoy.